Overkill, profusion, excess, surplus, too much, abundance. When it comes to the body of Christ, God is just a big show-off, heaping spiritual gifts on his people in an embarrassment of riches.
I'm Laura Pace.
And I'm Jessica Denny.
You're listening to Embarrassment of Riches, where we explore the wisdom, passion, power, and grace that God has showered on the women of Dallas Bible.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Laura.
Hi.
Look, that was almost normal.
That was
you almost did it.
I feel like I am borderline normal.
Borderline.
With the intro.
Yeah, you're getting there. Somewhere between normal and complete weirdo.
Yeah.
Tonight on Embarrassment of Riches, we are interviewing one of my favorites, Jamie Grant. Jamie endeared herself to me forever when she worked on the Seder with me, and I will never forget it.
How many chickens did y'all cut?
Like 50. We quartered 50 chickens.
It was a lot of chickens. I lost count at 3.
She has sung your praises.
Oh.
Over the chicken quartering.
I still have chicken grease under my nails.
Possible.
I'm pretty sure.
No, but Jamie, that truly, and I probably did tell you that, I've meant to write you a thank you note so many times. No, but here's my thank you note.
That's great. Thank
you. I mean, it was a big deal. And it wasn't just a big deal that, like, you helped and you were willing to help. It's just the way that you helped was, like, 100% all in. And I love that. Like, I love that about you. And it really did make me be, like, I'm a Jamie Grant fan. There's nothing you can do.
She has said those words to me.
Oh, there's nothing you can do that I wouldn't be all in for you on.
Well,
because
you
just
are
that
welcome.
One time, I'm like, nope, we're it.
So when you throw
whatever
dinner
you need,
for a couple hundred
girl.
People,
sure.
Call Jess to cater
right.
it.
Of course, she already knows what my MO is. Like, we don't need to quarter these chickens.
Just schlep
the container,
she
the chicken
to put
container.
The Sam's container on the table with a knife on each table.
I mean, it's got the juice in it.
I felt like it would work. And you know what?
I could just see chicken juice all over.
After cutting 50 chickens,
I don't think it was
a terrible idea. I don't think I agree that the presentation was better Jamie's way, but the labor.
I gotta get with you
chickens.
On that. Not to mention the fact that the chafing pans caught on fire.
Oh,
in the middle
I
of the
that.
Fire. Oh yeah. Well, we tried to keep it on the down low.
That is amazing. I missed it. I had kids projectile vomiting at home.
Well, Jamie, tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, who you are, where you come from.
Well, I am. Proudly now over 40. I have 2 children, one going into 6th grade, one going into kindergarten. I am originally from Florida. We've been here for 10 years. We moved 10 years ago when our son was about a year and a half old to be closer to my mom. I'm an only child.
Now, did you grow up in Florida?
I did. Born and raised.
And so where in Florida?
I was born in Orlando and raised in South Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Boca Raton.
And is your mom originally from Texas? Is that...
No, my mom's originally from Kansas. Her family came here about 40 years ago. Growing up, we lived in the Dallas area a couple of times. We moved here. I moved 13 times in 16 years.
Oh, wow.
So we moved a lot. And my family's not military or anything. We just moved a lot. When I went to...
Yeah, we were military and we moved like 4 times.
Right.
So that's more.
So it's a lot.
Yeah.
Right. So when I went to college at the University of Florida, which is where I met my husband of this year, 19 years.
Wow.
My mom moved back to Texas to be near her family. And then when Noah was born, we moved here to be closer to her.
Gotcha.
How old did you say your kids are again?
11 and 5.
Okay.
Jamie also teaches Lydia's Sunday school class. So my 5th grader.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, Tom joined me a couple of years ago, but we started doing that when Noah was, I probably started when Noah was in kindergarten.
You moved up with
and
him.
And we've just gone up with the whole
That's
time.
That's neat. So are you going to do youth next year?
Tom might do youth, and I might go to kindergarten and do Grace's class.
Okay.
Because she kind of feels like, hey.
It's her turn.
It's my turn.
Yeah, what's the deal? It's been 6 years.
Exactly.
That's amazing. I think that's such a huge undertaking to commit to weekly teaching Sunday school.
It's only once, it works out to like once a quarter,
okay.
like 1 month a quarter,
okay.
not once a quarter, but 1 month a quarter, because we have three or four other families that are committed.
Oh,
to
that's awesome.
It works out nicely.
That's really cool. Well, do you mind telling us a little bit more about what made you move 13 times?
What made, if I knew the answer to that question, I probably wouldn't have spent so much time in
were
therapy.
Were your parents gypsies? Yes or no?
Yes. No. So my parents were divorced by the time, before I was in kindergarten. I don't have a lot of memories of my parents being married. And so it was my mom and me. My mom raised me basically as a single mom. We moved to North Carolina when I was in third grade. Moved back to Florida because my mom got really sick. Moved out to Texas in fifth grade. My mom got married to my stepdad. We ended up moving back to Florida. Moved back to Texas in ninth grade. And moved back to Florida halfway through ninth grade.
Oh, wow.
In 10th grade, my mom and my stepdad got a divorce. And we just, my mom and I continued to move every year thereafter. Now, I did stay in the same town, at least, through high school. So, even though we moved a lot, it wasn't necessarily to
totally
another city.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was in Florida?
That was all in Florida. Well, okay. Not all in Florida. The moves
the last,
were,
the, yeah, the high, school, last high school. School was in Florida.
Yes.
Okay, and where did you go to college?
University of Florida.
Oh, so that was all.
I'm trying not to hold it against her.
Where did you go?
No, I went to Louisiana Tech, but I'm a huge LSU fan.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Are they rivals? I'm not in
the loop. Florida SEC. Is the only school that LSU in the East, the SEC East, that LSU plays every year. They're their permanent East rival.
Okay.
So, yes, they are.
There you go.
And no matter whether the Gators are bad... Or the Tigers are bad. It's always a close game.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is.
That's fun. Well, how did you come to know Christ?
Interestingly, on our first move out here to the Dallas area, which is actually East Texas, Greenville, my mom and I rented a house from this sweet older couple, and the woman was just total evangelist at heart, and... continued inviting us to church. My mom would say, no. Finally, my mom gave in. And we started going to a Baptist church in Greenville. And I went to a Christian school. I met my best friend, Kelly. And there was just something different about her. So my mom actually ended up coming to Christ probably right before I did. I didn't realize that's what was happening in her life. Mm-hmm. I just realized my friend Kelly had something that I didn't have, and I wanted that. And so, of course, in a Baptist church, you have to walk... This was old school. You had to walk down the aisle to the pastor up
front. We'll release you to lunch when 30 people have given their life to the Lord.
I sat there,
is he calling me, or is my stomach growling?
Yeah. I sat there for weeks. I was 10, and every week I was like, I can't do it. So, finally, one week, I think I got the nerve to ask my friend Kelly to go up front with me,
oh,
and
wow.
She did. And her mom was actually the one that asked me the questions and led me through the verses and the scripture and prayed with me.
Yeah. That's really neat.
So it was neat. Yeah, it was really cool.
And so it was kind of like this parallel process with your mom.
Yes. Yeah.
So did y'all share that? Did y'all talk about it?
No.
Too much intimacy.
No. Right. Yeah, our family didn't necessarily do that kind of intimacy. So, yeah.
So then, did you guys keep going to church, that same church?
So we moved.
Okay.
What?
To Florida.
We moved. This seems to be a theme.
We moved back to Florida, and I went to a Christian school for middle school, and we went on and off to a couple of different churches, but my mom was so young in her faith, and I think that made it really difficult for us and for a single mom. And
sure. And back then they didn't think about things like, hey, single moms need help.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like they didn't think about
very
all this
true.
Church support.
Very true. So I had youth group that I went to, but really we kind of fell off the radar with church in general through high school. And I didn't start going back on a consistent basis until halfway through college.
Okay.
And did anything lead to that?
Yes. I hit what was at that point an all-time low. And I won't go into the details, but...
It sounds similar to her all-time
low. We've got into our details with the podcast about our all-time low.
But
But Jess most of them were in college. Something about being in a garage and almost getting a tattoo.
Bears tattooed in.
I don't remember if I shared this on the podcast, but I think mine involved something about like waking up between cars and not knowing why.
Sure.
So good choices.
I woke up in the passenger seat of my car. My friends had left me.
Yeah.
And then I walked into the wrong
door. Your nonsense.
And then I walked into the wrong door.
So yeah. We're familiar. Yeah.
I'm familiar with the way with things lows. Can go low in college.
Right. So I basically found myself at the end of my bed one day going, what are you doing? Mm. And I didn't know where else to turn. And I was just like, okay, Lord, I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even know where to go.
Wake me up out of this ABC after school special.
Yeah, something like that. And I found a church in Gainesville, Florida. Started going, and that's actually where I met Tom.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And so did y'all get married right after college?
We did. I graduated from undergrad in May, and we got married in August. He finished undergrad in December and then went right back for his master's. So we stayed in that area for the next 2 to 3 years.
Now, I am under the impression that you went to Dallas Seminary. It's not just an impression, I know it to be true. But that you did it after you had children. Is that true or false?
So we moved out here 10 years ago, didn't know what DTS was. We started going to DBC and everybody talked about DTS. And I was like, what is wrong with these people and their acronyms? Everything is a DT something. And Pastor Hal was pastor at the time. We became friends with them. And maybe 6 months after we started going to DBC, Hal and Vicky invited Tom and I to a fundraiser for DTS to the banquet. I think it was like in February. And I came home from the banquet with an overwhelming urge to go to DTS. I had never heard about it before. I was 32 and had a kid who was a year and a half old. Thought I was way past my prime for doing anything like that. And the bottom line is, I ended up there.
Wow.
And 8 years later, I graduated. Also had another child in the middle of that.
8 years later, yes. That's the way it goes when you have a kid.
Right.
So what did you go to? I know the answer, but for our listeners, what did you go to DTS for?
Well, I started just asking for a degree in biblical studies. They didn't like that. They wanted to kind of put you in a vocational track. For people who, they want you to go into full-time ministry. So they put me in Christian education program. And I thought, it doesn't sound quite right, but okay. They all have the same core classes. So I just started taking core classes. A couple years in, I said, no, I need to be in the counseling track. Mm. So I switched tracks. About 4 years in is when I actually switched to the counseling track. And graduated with a master's in biblical counseling.
Which, P.S., I don't know if it's still this way, but the master's in biblical counseling has about, I want to say, 30 more hours attached to it.
Yes.
To the Christian ed. When the Christian ed is like 60-something hours, and that's like 90 hours.
90.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot. That's a lot more.
Yes, it was.
And so you were popping out babies, going to school. Were you working also, or was it... You were home and schooling.
Primarily home and schooling.
Okay.
I did a little
bit. But not homeschooling.
Not homeschooling.
Is she crazy? I'm just kidding.
Well, homeschooling
don't,
and
why
homeschooling
not? Don't take on homeschooling when you're getting your master's.
No, that would not have worked with my personality and my children.
Mm-mm. No, my patience would not sustain homeschooling.
So when you started at DTS, did you think you were, like, you wanted to go into vocational ministry? Or was it just something about... Like the just wanting to learn more. Like for me, I don't know that I wasn't opposed to going into full-time ministry, but growing up Catholic, I felt like going to a Bible church, some of the people I was around had just so much knowledge and understanding of scripture and of theology that I did not have. And I just wanted it. And I wanted to know more.
Sure.
Yeah. So for me, that was the motivator.
You wanted just to
I just wanted to know
increase
more.
your understanding.
And I was, you know, I was lucky enough to just have the freedom. I wasn't married yet and didn't have kids. So I had the freedom to flit about like the seven that I am.
I love that your flitting was going to seminary.
It was. Well, I had already flitted doing some other things. Yeah, I flitted over to Bears Tattooed In. I flitted over to Harper Dorm, even though I lived in Dudley. You know.
Yeah, there you go.
I had flitted other places and continued to flit later, but...
Your traditional flitting days were over.
Yes. Right. It's still flitting. It was just a healthier kind of flit.
There you go. Flitting redefined.
So you felt really convicted to just go there.
I just
And then once you were there, it was... Then you narrowed... That this the track, the counseling track, was what you should be on.
I wanted to be in ministry for sure, so I didn't necessarily go in just wanting more knowledge, although or more understanding. That was part of it. I really wanted to be in ministry, and I didn't know what that was going to look like. At some point in my life, I'm pretty sure that looked like being the next Beth Moore. And that is...
Welcome to the club.
Right.
You're among us.
And that is no longer a desire at all. She's Beth Moore. I get to be Jamie Grant. So God is showing me more and more, an increasing measure, who I am.
The glory that comes from quartering 40 to 50 chickens.
No. And it's not that.
For the glory of God.
God is showing you. Well, so... what is God showing you about the way that you are unique, the way you're uniquely gifted?
The way that I am wired. Well, I think there are definitely ways that I am wired that make me unique. And since the Enneagram is popular and you are teaching that right now, I am a four, which makes me even more special and unique.
And that's it's why you want to redefine spiritual gifts.
There you go.
Part of that's fourness.
Probably it. Probably it. God is, I think, showing me in greater depth, or maybe I should say really opening my eyes to understanding more about who I am. And in that has been letting go of this need to be special and an acceptance of being mediocre would be okay. So part of how I'm wired is both a gift and it's kind of a two-edged sword, I guess. It's also a way that I have used to not need Jesus.
Being self-sufficient.
Yeah, I can just make life work fine on my own the way that I have. I say fine. I'm going to put quotations, air quotes around that. Because I can try and make it work. I think we all try to make life work in our own ways. And God has used my story to show me that my way of making life work is really, in the end, it just leads to death. And I think that's God's whole economy is at first, when you look at it, seems so upside down, but really it's just paradoxical. You know, what seems like life to us and feels like life and energy to a four is being special and unique, and really in the end it leads to death. And so he's finally brought me, I think, to a place where at times I can say, I'm okay with being mediocre if that means that you're special, because he is.
Wow, that, I mean, I think that's an amazing lesson, probably one that I would have to repeat to myself over and over
again. Oh, yeah, you know, like everything, it's a process.
So, would you say that that's a recent process for you, that that's been something that God's revealing to you?
I think it's been a 41 and a half year process.
Yeah, that's about the turnaround of growth for me. I know, it takes some time.
Yeah, but I think it's been in process my whole life, even before I knew that I knew him. He knew me, and he was always working.
Well, and you say mediocre, which I think maybe especially for a four, but to me it maybe has some negative connotation to it, because it's like, but we're supposed to be special and something spectacular. But I think there is some specialness in just saying, what's your lane? Stay in your lane of giftedness instead of trying to be a Beth Moore. you can be special in this lane. It doesn't necessarily mean that you are mediocre or you're less than her.
Right.
But you're existing in your lane of giftedness that God's given you. And that is special and unique.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And some of it, I think, has been letting go. I think sometimes we hold on to what we want so tightly, whether that's in our lane or not.
Mm-hmm.
But letting go of it and saying, okay, I don't have to have this because it's not actually what's life-giving.
Mm-hmm.
What's life-giving is the Savior.
Yes.
So let me ask you this. Okay, if I'm describing Jamie Grant, who, as Laura has told you, I have repeatedly sung your praises. I'm not trying to blow smoke. Like, honestly, like, it was such a huge service to me. I should have written you a thank you note. It was such
a huge
service.
Don't shut on yourself.
I know. I'll
say that. Therapyisms.
But I feel like so I'm really good at feeling gratitude. I'm sometimes lax in expressing it.
I'm right there with you.
And but for me, I like there was such a sacrificial level of giving that you showed me throughout that whole process. And even that night, Jamie's the one who notices that things are on fire in the back. Jamie's getting up without me asking, and she's turning things over, picking up. I mean, she just
worker bee.
She was just a worker bee, and there's no glory in that. You know, that's just service. And
until someone sings your praises on a podcast,
right?
And makes you feel really uncomfortable.
No, I know.
There went those crowns.
Okay, so that's why I love you. What's Catherine Lanig's deal with you? Because she loves you too. So what is it that Catherine loves? Tell us.
I don't have any idea. Sometimes I don't know.
You gotta have an idea. No,
she's just a God gives us. Soul sisters. I don't have any sisters of my own, and he's given me several just women who I feel like are kind of, I don't know, can I use that word soul sister?
Sure.
Or is that too like cliche and I need to break into song?
I say kindred spirit and bosom pal like Anne of Green Gables.
I dropped purpose driven in the first podcast, so I won't judge whatever you say.
Okay, well, we'll just go with soul sister. Yeah.
Although it does make me kind of want to go.
Yeah, it's got a dance to it.
Yeah, I was actually going a different, not that one.
Oh, okay.
But did Jamie sang, it might not be picked up on the mic, but I just would like it to be known that sometimes people burst into song on this podcast.
Sometimes, meaning you.
Yes, but also Paula Quadrado sang.
Oh, yeah, did she?
Aww. She did. Mm-hmm. So, the joy
what,
brings out the
what
best.
You were saying you want to know what Catherine Lanig
is. Yes, I bet you know.
I don't. I think, you know what I think it is? When God gives you those people in your life, it's just a mutual enjoyment, which is, I think, what community is, right? I mean, that's God puts us in community for mutual enjoyment of one another, just like the Trinity exists in community and in triuneness, and they mutually enjoy each other. And so it doesn't even feel like anything in particular other than, I'm home. Mm-hmm. It just feels like you're home. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if she would say something different, but with those people that God's given me, it feels like home.
I love those kind of friends because they make it easy.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, it is easy.
Like there's not a lot of effort.
There's not. Well, and even, you know, I learned recently about myself as a 7
mm-hmm.
that I'm most generous when it adds to my enjoyment.
I think that's cool.
It is, and sometimes it's not. There's an ugly side of it, but I would say that there's some level, like with friends, where it is my delight. Like those kind of friends, it is my delight to help.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think that's what service is too. So many times, I think when we talk about service, as humans, we like to check off lists and see what we've done and feel that. Okay, we've met some sort of standard and behaved in some sort of way.
excuse me.
But I think
that wine went down the wrong pipe. There may be more of those coffees. Okay, I'm good. Go ahead. Service, you were saying?
I think service, when it's truly service, and therefore not born out of us, but rather through Christ's formation in us, it's just delight and enjoyment. It doesn't feel like work. It doesn't feel like drudgery. I think probably when I've truly served, I haven't even known it. You know what I mean? I don't know if that makes sense.
No, and it feels just like something natural within you to do.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it sounds like you, I mean, I think you probably knew it was service, but it doesn't sound like it even registered as that big of a deal what you did at the Seder, and it was a really big deal
right.
to you.
Yes.
So,
although I think even Jamie would admit it really wasn't fun cutting all those chickens.
No, I said it felt like service.
Chicken cutting?
Yeah.
Not fun.
I mean, it was for Jesus, but
what y'all are saying is that chicken cutting would not be your big ask prayer.
No.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Mm-mm. No more
poultry
shoots.
But it is funny,
because
I will tell you, like, that is the dead last thing I ever want to do again.
Yeah.
But it was so fun. I mean, it was fun, too.
You said y'all laughed a lot.
We laughed a lot. It's hard not to laugh when you're
elbow deep in chicken
grease.
And rotisserie chicken.
Yeah.
Oh, my car smelled like farts for weeks.
So special.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even mention that. She picked up the 50 chickens herself and lugged them to the church in her car.
Actually, Catherine met me there. Oh. That's what she loves about me.
That's what you love about Catherine.
Oh, that's right.
She's loyal. She's a six, right?
She's loyal. She did find a pair of jeans, though, there at Sam's when we picked up the chickens, so maybe that's what she likes.
Maybe.
She was able to buy Sam's
jeans. I buy
jeans.
Chickens, she buys jeans.
Jeans.
Sorry, Catherine.
Well,
if I don't
get those, I'm going to get these jeans.
So what would your big ask prayer be? If you, like,
help
short
God.
Of being, or
it really
is
sounds like you're saying big ask prayer.
Well, this is a Jessica Denny-ism.
Which I stole from Craig Pierce.
It's
ABC.
Kind of up there with don't should on yourself.
Yes.
Gotcha.
So he one time asked us, like, sometimes we pray small. And like God's not capable of taking our big asks. And so he was challenging us that we need some big ask prayers.
Mm.
Like, throw down what you would like to see God do. And so that's one of the things we're asking our guests is what's a big ask you have? What would you love to see God just throw down in your ministry, in your life?
Mm. That's a hard one. Maybe because I'm a four, I tend to think a little bit existentially and philosophically. And so my big...
Yeah, you said paradoxical a second ago. So I think you're right.
I think my big ask prayer has been the same for, I can't tell you how many years. And it's, God, help me love people.
Mm.
I can't do it without Him. And it's not... I just don't think that we can love, live, experience all that He has for us without Him. And in that, it looks harder than I would have ever thought. Mm. Because so many times I think we want God to give us love in the hate, and joy in the sorrow, and peace in the anxiety. And we sort of want those hard feelings to go away, and for, like, God to just make the good feelings true in us.
Wait, is that wrong?
Yes, seven.
Okay. That sounds great to me. Is
yeah,
that how we're supposed to be doing?
Can I steal those prayers that you just said and use them for my own?
But I think the truth is that God has written our whole story. And so if we bypass all of those hard things, then we're bypassing not just what's hard, but we're bypassing His story for our lives. And His story was written for each one of us to know Him.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, know Him and be known by Him.
In the sorrow, in the hate, in that.
I think He exchanges those things, and it's a process. But until we're honest with the hate and the anger and the resentment and the pain and we come face to face with those, and it's a constant. I mean, I'm not saying we just get to do it one time and it's over, but just coming and confessing. For example, the other night, I really wanted somebody to get on board with me, another one of my soul sisters, and I just needed to feel vindicated and justified, and I needed to gossip, and I stopped myself, and I went, what am I doing? If I feel like I need to be justified for something, what is the reason for that? And I realized I had felt judged by the other person, and in that, I felt anger for them and hate. And so instead of trying to find vindication from my friend, I was like, all right, Jesus, here's what I got. It's a whole lot of nothing. Nothing much except for hate and anger and bitterness, and I don't know what to do with it. And it's not like something magical happened at right. that moment, but I think it's those moments where God starts taking the loaves and the fish of a small boy's lunch and multiplying it to feed thousands.
I don't like what you're saying, but it has the ring of truth to it.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. I think it's fantastically true. And you know what? I think something magical did happen, because it feels kind of counterintuitive to turn to Jesus sometimes. It feels so much better to complain to your friend and be like, validate me. Doesn't this feel good? So I think it is magical when you can stop and go, wait, what does Jesus have for me in this? Even though right now sucks, and I know I could relieve these sucky symptoms by gossiping, by doing whatever other behavior, instead of turning it back to him.
It's interesting, as what the three of us being mental health professionals, and me being, I would say, a stunted growth seven, emotionally stunted. No, I'm sort of joking, but sort of not. There is a funny thing about humans and their inability to name that feeling. We like to pretty up our feelings and call anger irritation, and bitterness hurt, and sometimes I think naming the actual feeling, what is the actual feeling that you're having? It can be really convicting.
Taking some ownership of it and being honest about it. And I mean, I don't work strictly with Christians, but it also is so nice to be able to say, what do you think God has for you here? Not to change it.
Right.
Not to make hate love. Not to make anger joy all of a sudden. But what do you think God has for you right here? And then even with non-Christian clients, to go, what would it be like to just kind of sit with this for a second instead of trying to, you know, mask it with a lot of the reasons that they're coming to see me with their what behavior they've done to try to make the feeling, the ugly feeling, go away.
Yeah. I think the cool thing too is he gives us, alongside the sorrow, and only God can do this, he gives us joy. And it's all of, it's again, because it's to the paradox. In all of the hard, he gives us him.
Oh, yeah. And it, I, you know, I was joking, of course, because I have a hard, bitter joke side. Like, I don't like what you're saying. I really don't like what you're saying. No, in the sense of, like,
because
I'm
being
really,
true.
Because I'm being really honest. Because it's really true. Because what you're saying is really true. That's why I don't like it.
You're honest.
I had a little cousin that was 10 years younger than me growing up, and if you told him no, he would say, I don't like what you're saying to me.
I love that.
I don't like what you're saying
to me. That's how I feel when I get a no.
But you're talking about that, and there is this, I don't know, there, like, that thing where you think about your darkest days, and mine weren't bears tattooed in, though that was a dark day, it wasn't the darkest. And thinking about how much I don't want to do that again, wouldn't want to relive that, But the beauty, that's what I love about Force, their ability to see beauty in affliction. That there is beauty in affliction, and it's usually God's presence, or at least that's how it's been for me, where there's never more evidence of Him than when I am in deep, deep pain. And He shows up in a way that feels like He is breathing for me. And I do love that. So that does seem true to me, Jamie. Even though I don't like Him, I would like Him to just reveal yourself to me in all the spectacular majesty that you
can
have.
Can I please just find you in joy?
Can I find you in joy?
Right. Well, that's what, I think I've shared this before. I saw a meme once that hit home for me having little kids.
You make like, your, it's not that, it's not, it's, you, wait, oh gosh, sorry, I'm interrupting you. I had my favorite meme, but it like, it fell apart.
Well, the your meme
problem,
I told you,
your problem is you're stupid and you make bad decisions.
That's not it, although accurate.
I saw that one. It made me laugh. I want to say that about 30 times a day.
It's not. Yeah, that's right. No, mine was, dear God, give me patience. Not opportunities to practice patience, just the actual stuff. Like, just give me the patience. And I think that's kind of along the same vein. Like, God, give me more of yourself. But don't give me hard experiences that would require me to need more of you. Just give me more of you and happy and rainbow land.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so your big ask prayer is just to love people. How would you see that playing out in like your career and your wifing, momming, all of that stuff?
Your wifing.
It's a verb.
I'm wiping like hard tonight.
Believe me, sometimes it's a verb.
I wiped hard today.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think love is something, and I say love with a capital L, because love is, I will always go back to 1 John, love is a person. Love is Jesus, who is the image of the invisible God. And so as God uses my story to pour out of me what I came into the world with, which was wrath and rage and anger and hate, which we can, I can give you a reference for all of those and pretty much all of the epistles, He pours that out and pours Himself into me. And as He does that, I get more of love and love gets more of me. And so I don't know that I would be able to say specifically how that looks, except that it feels like real life. It's life-giving, not the kind of life that I thought I had, holding on to what I wanted so much because it was like a drug. But life that is true life.
Can you think of a time where God has really showed up for you? Where it was so obvious?
All of the time. And so many times I forget that He shows up, quite honestly. One of my other dear friends, Annie Starr, is somebody who will call me back to truth. And when I've been in hard things with family, that's always, I think, a place where there's lots of opportunity for Jesus to show up in hard family dynamics. She will always remind me to look for Jesus. Look for Jesus to show up. And I'm always like, oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, He does show up.
Why are we continually surprised?
I know.
But I always am.
Like He's going to be
Wow, I can't believe He did that.
Exactly. So specifically, I'm sure I could think of 100 examples, but really, it's in the moments that I think are going to be miserable, and I find joy. And I could give, like I said, lots of specific examples. I won't go into one, but it when Jesus shows up, it looks like joy.
Even in hard dynamics, even in awkward confrontations or encounters.
Yep. Exactly.
I think it's amazing that you have such a neat tribe of women that are championing you to see Christ in the hard and the suckage. That's another special word.
That's an adverb, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm going to go adjective. Adverb with that one. Adjective, yeah, that's right. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And sharing your story. I think you're really inspirational. You are definitely a solid four. I feel pretty confident that you're way smarter than me. As I was sitting here listening to you talk. And I don't know. I think there could be some Beth Moore in you. That could be in your lane.
I don't know. God, I'd have to make that happen. I don't know if I want that.
Yeah, those dreams change.
Well, I was already a Jamie Grant fan, so I haven't changed my mind. I appreciate Thanks. You. Just love the person that you are. Love your heart for service.
Thank you.
I think I especially appreciated it as a person that I wasn't your friend. I was just somebody that needed help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're more than just somebody that needed help.
Now I am.
Even before that, you were a friend of a friend.
A friend of a friend.
You were a friend of Catherine.
I was. Mm-hmm. I love Catherine.
Yeah.
So, anyway, thanks so much for joining us. We hope you join us again next time on Embarrassment of Riches.